So for the past 2 weeks, we have been talking about parenting, specifically parenting by faith, based on the acts of the mother of Moses in Exodus chapter 2. Okay, based on the text that we pulled out, you know, in Exodus chapter 2, we pulled out five truths about parenting by faith and how we as parents today can apply these truths as we raise our children in this crazy world that we live in right now. In the audience right now, how many of you have kids? How many of you have young kids? Not a lot, right? Most of you have, only you guys, right? Everybody else have their kids are all grown and stuff like that. So it's hard to raise kids now with the way the world's going on right now. It's hard to raise kids. Even me, I have a 21-year-old and a 15-year-old. It's so hard. And what they teach them in school, especially, it's so hard. When they come home, they ask all these questions about, you know, sexuality, you know, racism and all this. Questions. It's so hard for a parent to deal with that nowadays. So that's why when we dove into Exodus, that's the first thing that I kind of saw as Moses' mother tried to save him from the grip of the king of Egypt in those times. And through her example, we took out five truths, right? They all start with the letter P, if you guys remember. First, pay no attention or no mind to. Those of you who are thinking about having kids, young couples out there, we have a few in our young people right now. If you're thinking about having kids in today's world, have kids. Trust God. Trust that God will help you raise them. So pay no attention or no mind to the society of what the society we live in right now and the problems that it poses to new parents. Instead, trust in God. In having kids as well, please prepare them. Prepare them for the world that they will be facing as they, you know, get out into that world and out of your control, out of your household. We also learned that we should put our kids in their place, right? As parents, we have this authority that's God-given to us to use on our kids so that they will learn, so that they will be able to be discipled and disciplined. Okay, don't let your kids run your household. Pretty much that's the message of that week's message. Put them in their place. The next P would be to place them on the river or release them in the world. There are a couple of parents here right now whose kids are there. 18, 20, 21, 22, some of them older, that are already in the world. We have no choice as parents. We have to place our kids in the world. Not of the world, but in the world. We have to let them go, so to speak, because they'll, you know, they'll grow up, hopefully have their own families and live their own lives. But as we do that, you know, a lot of parents, they have a hard time letting go of their kids, especially those who have kids that are married already. And I can see we have Gary and Ate Jelly. They have a, you know, Jillian San Juan. I was watching Jillian's interview on Omni, and they introduced her as Jillian San Juan. I'm like, what? Who? Who's Jillian San Juan? But that's how it is. We got to let go of our kids, especially daughters, right? Fathers, they give away their daughters. So that's what happens. So we have to have faith in the teachings, in how we raise them, but at the same time, faith in God to continue to guide them, especially when they start their own lives. Now, last week I said that part of preparing our children for the world is to put them in their place, meaning that as parents, we should exercise our God-given authority on our children while we still can. Those of you with young kids, okay? Those of you with young kids, please do that, especially those of you who are the fathers of these young kids. Put your kids in their place while you still can, right? We need to do this because there will come a time where we have to release them or place them onto the river of the world. And then when that time comes, all you can do is pray. Ask any parent out here with adult children. There's not much more, you know, talking. Or, I mean, you can still do it. but there's not much lecturing going on. Most of the time, it's just coaching, and a lot of prayer. Because at this point in their lives, they're going to be making their own decisions. And all we can do is, you know, be there for them while they make their own decisions and while they live their own lives, and pray for them. Now, hopefully, nobody who listened to the message last week felt fear or doubt. Okay, because I know sometimes when you hear that, that's it, I have to release and that's it. Sometimes fear sets in, doubt sets in. Hopefully, no one who listened to the message last week felt that fear or doubt. Hopefully, what we got from that message from last week was the fact that the last two P's of parenting, the placing and the prayer, is where our faith plays the biggest part. Okay, that's where faith in God plays the biggest part. Once our kids are grown up, are adults making their own decisions, and when they leave home, especially, that's where faith plays the biggest part in our parenting, right? But faith in what, or faith in who? Yes, faith in your discipline, faith in your teaching, faith in your the way you raise your kids, but mostly and ultimately, it is faith in God. Faith in God to do what? To continue to watch and minister and discipline our children when they're all grown up and they're out of our homes and out of our control. Okay. That's when we believe, we start trusting God for our children's lives. Right? And our influence as parents is at a minimum. We have to trust that God's influence on them will never change. That's why at an early age, we start pointing them to God. Remember the stats? 70% of those 18 to 20-year-olds tend to leave the church and sometimes the faith once they get that old. Hopefully, those kids that we raise here at GBC will not be part of that statistic, right? And for them not to, yes, we teach, yes, we give them the foundations, but ultimately, we have to trust that God will do the work in their lives so that then when they reach those age, that age, they will not depart. They will not forget what they have learned, right? But again, it's hard as parents to let go of these kids. Even myself, the kids that I ministered to in youth, they're all adults now. Couple of them got married recently. Still, a few of them are thinking about marriage. Some are leaving for school. Some are moving to, you know, different a different part of the province. And it's hard for me to see them go. But at the same time, you know what? I trust that God will, you know, remind them of all the things that they learned here during their time at youth. And hopefully, we're the same as parents, right? So, this is what we're going to see at this next part of the story, okay? When Jochebed's parenting of Moses seems to be at the mercy of the Nile River, when she let the baby go through the Nile, God's sovereignty and grace was more evident and more abundant than ever, okay? If you think about what happened during the story, and we're going to go through it right now. So at this point of the story, we've seen how God, through Moses' mother, Jochebed, has saved Moses from certain death, right? And if you think about it, that must suck for Moses because by the time he's born, everyone was trying to kill him already, right? Not just nature at that point in time, but even the people around him were already trying to kill him because of the king's decree, right? What was the king's decree? Kill all the baby Hebrews. Why? Because he was trying to control their population. At the same time, he was thinking that, oh, without men in the Hebrews, with the Hebrews, there will be no soldiers to fight against me. Right? That was his thinking, the thinking of the king of Egypt in those days. So what did the mother of Moses do? Put Moses in a basket and released him into the Nile. Now if you think about it, okay, grown people drifting through the Nile have very little chance of survival. Okay. If you know the Nile River, again, like what I said last week, it's one of the biggest rivers in the world. There's crocodiles, there's snakes, there's just the river, it could drown you. going through there, even if you're grown, of a grown person, very little chance of surviving the Nile, let alone a baby by himself. So there's little chance of survival, right? But by faith, Moses' mother, to save him, put him on the Nile River. This is where we see God at work in this story. Because how else can you explain a basket surviving one of the largest rivers on earth? Right? How else can you explain that? And not just survive, but somehow make it into the hands of Pharaoh's daughter. That's the next part of the story, right? Let's read it again. Exodus 2, verses 5 and 6. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, while her young women walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds, and she sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. And she took pity on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." So now, when we read that story, the first thing that comes to our mind is like, "Woo, good news, right? Moses made it through the river." But is it really good news? Right? What was the decree of the king to all his people, including his daughter? Throw all Hebrew babies into the Nile. So is it really good news that Pharaoh's daughter ended up getting the baby? Because if you think about it, the logical thing that should follow is that she sees the baby and she says, "Oh, it's one of the Hebrews." What should be the logical thing? Right? Because that was her father's decree. Right? But what happened? What happened after Pharaoh's daughter sees Moses, a Hebrew baby boy, after she sees him, what happened? Did she throw him into the Nile? No. Instead, she took pity on him. Right? She took pity on Moses. Is that luck or is it coincidence? I don't think so. Right? Some people probably think, "Oh, that's just luck. This is plain luck." Or coincidence that Pharaoh's daughter was just there and she wanted a baby and baby came and she took it. But I don't think so. Because if it is, Moses, if it is based on luck, okay, Moses must be the luckiest baby alive at that point in time. He not only survived the edict of the king, he got away from the people of Egypt who were trying to kill him. Okay, he floated through the Nile without a scratch. And now, at the hands of Pharaoh's own daughter, instead of hating him or showing anger towards him, the way her father did to the Hebrews, Pharaoh's daughter took pity on baby Moses, even after identifying him as a Hebrew. Luck? Just part of the story. Sabi kasi ni Derek, tanggapin daw eh. Right? No. God's hand was at work the whole time. If you look at the odds, right? What are the odds of surviving the Nile River? Just by that itself. God's hand was at work the whole time. And not only that, okay, not only did God somehow spoke to the daughter of Pharaoh, he also made a way for Moses to be raised by his own mother, right? Next verse, 7 to 9. Then his sister, Moses' sister, said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said, "Go." So the girl went and called the child's mother, Jochebed, right? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman, Jochebed, took the child and nursed him. Right? So again, luck? Coincidence? I don't think so. Right? Now, question is, how do you think Jochebed felt at this point? Okay. Jochebed, at the last time we saw her, released the basket on the river. It was Moses' sister that came following the basket. So Jochebed had no idea what happened to her baby at that point. That's the last time we saw Jochebed. So the baby could have, I don't know, how about you? I don't know if you felt that way. If your kid was out, they said they were going to a party, I'll be home by 10, right? And it's 12 o'clock, they're not home. How do you feel? 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, not home yet. How do parents feel at that point? It's hard, right? Those of you at home, it's hard, right? How do you think Jochebed felt at this point, right? How much pain and fear must she be feeling after releasing Moses into the river? Yet, only a few verses later, we see her again. Okay, this time, she's holding the baby, her baby, in her arms. And not only that, she's getting paid to nurse her own baby and given the opportunity to parent him at this critical stage in his life. Who here would want to get paid to take care of your own kids? Yes, right? Motherhood is the only job that is 24/7 that they don't get paid. Right? Who here would want mothers to get paid to raise your kids? Obviously, you would, right? So that's what happened to Jochebed. So after releasing, feeling all that fear, all of a sudden, what? I get my baby back? And I get paid to nurse the baby and the opportunity to parent him? Especially at that stage in his life. Right? Now, you're reading the story, you know, okay, everybody else out there in Facebook world, we know that Jochebed didn't get to keep Moses. Okay, she had to give him back after weaning him or after nursing him. Right? Now, there's no mention here of how old Moses was when Jochebed returned him to Pharaoh's daughter. It's not said, it's not mentioned. All we know was that Moses was at least 3 months old when Pharaoh's daughter found him. So we know he's 3 months at the time Pharaoh's daughter gave Moses back to Jochebed. That's all we know. Now, back in those days, if you read historical accounts of raising babies back in those days, weaning or breastfeeding a baby was very important to the survival of the child. According to this website called GodQuestions.org, infant mortality rates were high in ancient cultures, right? And that's why weaning a child was a cause for celebration. Why was it high back in those days? Well, as a baby, you're prone to all kinds of infections, all kinds of diseases. Nowadays, our kids are so protected. They're in this bubble, right? Oh, they're not allowed to get this. We got to keep them away from all dirt and all this other stuff. Back in those days, you can't. Back in those days, there's no refrigeration for milk, right? So breastfeeding was it, right? It's the safest way for a baby to be weaned, okay? That's how it is back in those days, and that's why, because of the situation, when a child gets weaned, it's a cause for celebration. Right? When a child is fully weaned, this means that the child has survived the most critical stage of life when he or she is now able to eat solid foods. Even at that point, it's still not safe for a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old because the foods that they eat, again, they're not refrigerated. Some of them are probably sitting out in the sun or, just rotting, and then they feed that to the baby, and baby gets sick. There's no medicine. There's no doctors. Baby dies. So even at that point, it's still hard for a child to survive that stage in life. But most commentaries place a child at around 3 to 5 years of age when they become fully weaned. Okay? So when they say that, oh, this child is fully weaned, the child is about 3 to 5 years old. Okay? 3 to 5 years old. Now, why is this so significant? It's interesting and it's significant because when it comes to childhood development, birth to age 5 are the critical development milestones in the life and development of a child. This is where they learn stuff that they will carry through all their lives. Some child psychologists are even saying that this is the stage where the trajectory of the child's life is determined. Birth to five. 5 years to teach the child what he needs to know or she needs to know in order for their life trajectory to be what you want it to be, or hopefully what we want it to be as parents, right? This is critical. An article in allforkids.org said this, that the first 5 years of a child is crucial to their health, their well-being, and the overall trajectory of their lives. Right? It's crucial. That's why I keep drilling, saying to you guys over and over again, especially you guys at home, those of you who have toddlers, okay, little kids, exert your authority on them now when they are kids. So that when they grow old, they will still respect it. They will still see you as authority, and they will still listen to you. If you don't exert that now, when they get old, guess what? And I'm not talking about old 18-year-old, 20-year-old. I'm talking about 10, 15-year-olds. They start talking back to you. They don't listen. They don't respect you. Why? Because you didn't wean them properly. From birth to 5 years old, right? And that's where your influence is most crucial. Now, why is this important? Why is this so significant as far as the story of Moses is concerned? If you fast forward to verse 11, okay, let's just read it, verse 11. One day, when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. Why is that significant? Because if you ask yourself, how did Moses know that these were his people? Okay? How did he know that the Israelites, who were slaves at that point, and at this point in verse 11, Moses was about 40 years old, or 30 to 40 years old. So he's all grown up. And he grew up mostly in Egypt. How did he know that these were his people? Right? When he was all grown up. I believe he was taught in the early stages of his life by his mother that these were his people. There's no other way. He spent time with his mother, weaning him. How else could he know? The Egyptians are not going to teach them that these were his people. They're just going to show. He's just going to teach them that they're slaves, right? He was learned in that. Moses was learned in that. But I believe that the time he spent with his mother was the part of his life, birth to five, where he learned that these were his people. So even though Moses grew up in Egypt, grew up as Pharaoh's daughter, and was raised and educated in Egypt. In fact, if you read Acts 7, 20 to 23, let's read that. Acts 7, 20 to 23. It says, at this time, Moses was born, and he was beautiful in God's sight, and he was brought up for 3 months in his father's house. And Moses was, when he was exposed, Pharaoh's daughter adopted him and brought him up as her own son. And look at 22. And Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the what? Not the Israelites, not the Jews. It was the Egyptians. And he was mighty in his words and deeds. 23. When he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brothers, the children of Israel. So as he grew up, he was taught all Egyptian things. Whatever the wisdom of the Egyptians were, that's what he was taught. So how did he know that the Israelites were his brothers? Because his mom taught him. Jochebed taught him during the ages of 3 months to 5 years old. Okay, it might not be exact. Okay, it might be 3 months to 3 years old or 3 months to 4 years old. But that weaning period, that's when he was taught by Jochebed the foundations that would ultimately determine the trajectory of his life. That's why it's important for us to figure that out, to read that as, oh, wait a sec. How long did Jochebed keep Moses before she returned him to Pharaoh's daughter? Why? Because that's when he was taught all these truths. And guess what? The Bible is true, right? Proverbs 22, right? Train up a child in where he should go so that, what? When they are old, grown up, they won't depart from that teaching. That's true because Moses, even though he's already 40, never forgot what he learned from those early years with his mother, which would play a huge role, again, in setting the trajectory of who Moses will become as the story unfolds. And so after being weaned by his own mother, Jochebed once again had to give up Moses to Pharaoh's daughter, Exodus 2:10. So when the child grew older, and we're saying that older, and again, don't take this as, you know, it. Research yourself, okay? But I'm saying, if you're based on the weaning process back in those days, based on historical figures, when the child grew older meant when Moses was about 5. Now, there are some commentaries out there that will say that older means a teenager. Who knows? I'm just saying, based on the weaning process, I think that's about 5. So he was taught from 3 months to 5 whatever he needed to know about being a Hebrew. Right, and then when he got older, when he became 5, she brought him, Jochebed brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she said, I drew him out of the water. That's the story. Now, what can we learn from it? Right? What can we learn from this part of the story? I'm going to share with you 3 observations, 3 truths that I see in the part of the story. You may see others, okay, if you study it yourself. But from my perspective, from my point of view, this is what I learned from this part of the story. 3 truths. They all begin with the letter C, okay? C. First C is coincidence. Second C is call. And third C is care. Coincidence, call, care. So very quickly, let's go through them one by one. First truth that I learned that I want to share with you is that there is no such thing as coincidence. No such thing as coincidence. Coincidence is defined as a remarkable occurrence of events or circumstances without apparent causal connection, or we could also define it as chance or luck. Who believes in chance? Like you just happen to be here right now. Who believes in that? Those of you who buy lotto, you think you're going to win? You think the people that win the lotto won by luck? Yes, because of the odds, right? But really, do they win by luck? I don't know, right? But I believe, as believers, there is no such thing as coincidence. I'm going to use myself as an example. I'll start by using coincidence in a sentence, okay? And the sentence goes like this. It was no coincidence that I was the youth pastor of this church when Pastor Luis decided to retire early and called me to replace him. It was no coincidence that when I was the youth pastor, that's the year when Pastor Luis decided to retire. No coincidence. I say that because I believe that even going back 33 years, okay, I came here in 1988, 33 years back, I was already predestined to come to this place and be a member of this church. And I say that because during our time here in this church, my parents left the church. I don't know if you guys remember that, some of you remember it, right? They left, but only them. I stayed along with my brother and my sister. At that point, we were traveling from Mississauga to here, back and forth on the GO train. So, was it coincidence that I stayed here even though my parents left especially at that stage in my life where, you know, as a family, we should be in one church. But no, what happened? After they left, we tried that church. I think it was, but at that time, it was called Mississauga City Baptist Church. We went there for a few Sundays. It just didn't feel right. I had to come back here and again, even though it was far, we had to come back here. Was that a coincidence? Because I don't know how many years later, I would become who I am now. Was that coincidence? I don't think so. Right? And I believe whatever happened before the night that pastor called me and told me he was going to retire early and he wanted me to replace him, the night before, everything else that happened before that was no coincidence as well. From the time I was born to that time, I believe that there was no coincidence that happened during the events that I went through throughout my life that led me to this point. Right? There's no such thing as coincidence. None of those things happened by luck or by chance. Even the bad things. I did some bad things. That's why when they told me, when people hear, oh, he's the pastor, how the heck? How did that happen? Because I was a bad kid. I was. Not proud of it, but if you look at the trajectory of my life back then, you wouldn't say, oh yeah, that kid is going to be a pastor. No, more like jobless, because I dropped out of school, so much bad things. And that's why you can't say that, I worked my way up to this. No. It was all God's hand at work. There was no coincidence with whatever happened before to where I am now. And I'm saying that because that's the same thing with Moses. As a baby, how do you survive the things that he survived at 3 months old? Coincidence? Luck? I don't think so. So no such thing as coincidence. It was all by God's grace and sovereignty that he led me to this country and to this church 33 years ago to be who I am today. Moses' survival was no coincidence as well. God knew all along who Moses was going to be. He was going to be the rescuer of the Hebrews. Everything that has happened in Moses' life so far happened under the sovereignty of God alone. Do we believe that? I hope so. Jeremiah 1, verse 5. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I appointed you a prophet to the nations. This is to Jeremiah, right? Before he was even born, God already knew what he was going to do with him. The Apostle Paul, Galatians 1:15. But when he who had set me apart before I was born and who called me by his grace. Right? If you look at the trajectory of Paul's life, that didn't look like he was going to be one of the greatest apostles, if not the greatest, most influential apostles to live. No. Right? He was a murderer. He was persecuting Christians. That trajectory doesn't lead to great apostle writing half of the Bible. No. But what happened? God knew before he was born. He set him apart already. There is no coincidence when it comes to a life of a believer, a life of a Christian that God called, which is the next C. Okay, that's where we're going to, that God calls. So next C is the calling of God, right? The calling of God. If you believe in the first C, you've got to believe in this next C, God's call, right? We saw that from the story of Moses. Those whom God calls, he equips. Or in other words, those whom God calls, he provides for whatever they need in order for them to accomplish his call for their lives. As far as Moses is concerned, as this part of the story unfolds, what did he need? He needed salvation. He needed to be saved from the king, from the people, from the river, from Pharaoh's daughter. Did God come through? Yes. Because all of those things that happened to him, if you think about the odds of Moses making it, is very little to none. But Moses made it. We see that in the early years of Moses, right? We see the provision of God as Moses slowly becomes the rescuer that God has called him to be. Now, what about us, right? Are we hearing the call of God for our lives? Do we know what God is calling us to do? And if we do, do we follow through? Do we obey? Right? Or is there fear or doubt that kind of hinders our vision when it comes to running to the call of God instead of neglecting it? If that's you, if there's fear or doubt in you, like some of you are probably going to be called as deacons this coming year. Right? I'm just saying. Right? How would you respond to that? With faith or with fear? Right? With faith or with fear? If it's fear, then take a look at this part of the story of Moses again. Again, 3 months old. Overcame a psychotic king, overcame a raging river, overcame the king's daughter. Right? So what are you so worried about that God cannot help you overcome in order for you to heed his call? And I'm not talking about call to the pastorate. I'm talking about just for the people at home, a call to come to service in person. It's that simple, right? Some of us, we don't want to get up, number one, I think because of laziness. It's so convenient to be at home. Number two, we're scared. Oh, what if somebody goes there like, you know, with no shots? And they get through the checking process, they have no shots. Oh no, what if I get COVID? If that's what's stopping you, then hey, this is now the point. We legally, by the government standards, we're allowed to open. So, you know, we'd expect more people to come to church. We'd expect people to be excited to come to church. But who knows why people? What's stopping people from coming? Right? I'm saying if God's calling you to come by faith, you go. Right? It's open now. So that's the call I'm talking about. It's not even about being a pastor or being a deacon. It's just those little things. Are you being called to join a prayer meeting again or Sunday school again? Or are you being called to missions? Are you being called to do, you know, to have missions here? Are you being called to do that? If you are, by faith, heed God's call. Because whom he calls, he also equips. Those whom he calls, he also equips. Right? Now the last C, so two C's so far. No such thing as coincidence and God calls. Right? And that's not a coincidence either. When God calls you, it's not a coincidence either. It's not by luck or by chance. Last C, God cares for his children. That's why the title of this message is Good Father, because God cares for his children. Rewind the story of Moses, right? Back to Jochebed as she was getting ready to place Moses' basket onto the dangerous Nile River. What do you think Jochebed was feeling at that point? If you were the parent and you had to let go of your 3-month-old on a river in a basket, how would you feel? Must have torn her to pieces, especially as a mother, right? Mothers have different instincts about these things, right? I know fathers be like, they'll make it. He's a boy. He's good. But mothers are different, right? Especially as the mother, right? It must have torn her to pieces, but she had no choice. Like I said earlier, like I said last week, as parents, we too don't have a choice. One of these days, we're going to let go of our little babies. And they're going to drift into the world. They're going to grow old and they're going to live their own lives. Only our faith that someone is always watching them will enable us to do that, to let go. Otherwise, you'll be all over your kids. I know, those of you who have kids that already moved out, Only one? I think only one. Just you guys. You call her every time? Did you eat yet? Did you? Huh? You have a family chat? Because I felt like that when I first moved out. I felt like I had to call my parents before I go to sleep. And my dad would be like, did you lock the doors? Did you check the stove? Did you check, you know? That's how parents are. And sometimes that could be overbearing on children. You know, you should let them make their own mistakes. You should let them live their own lives. But a lot of times parents don't do that because they don't have the faith to do that. They don't have faith in what they taught their kids. They don't have faith in God to watch over their children. And it's only faith that will enable us to be doing that. And as we have seen, parenting by faith ultimately means having faith in God as a good father, someone who will always be there for our children no matter what. We can't do that, especially when they're adults. We can't be there for them all the time. But with faith in God, He's always there. He's always there no matter what. Someone who never sleeps. We can't do that either. Those of us who remember the experience of raising newborns, you're not supposed to be sleeping, but sometimes you're so tired, you fall asleep. I remember falling asleep when I was taking care of Eli, and he was at the foot of the bed. The only thing that woke me up was his crying because he fell from the bed. Not good parenting. Why would you sleep? You're the parent, right? But we can't do that. But God can. God never sleeps. Someone who never gets tired. Okay? I get calls from some of the young people wanting to talk and wanting to have a chat. I'm like, well, don't you have parents? Why don't you talk to your parents? Oh, my parents are always tired. Oh, my parents are always busy. My parents are always... God never gets tired. Right? And this is the most important one, someone who will never die. Right? One of these days, we're going to leave this world. And I think that's one of the reasons, main reasons why we have to prepare our kids for the world is because one of these days, we're not going to be there anymore. Right? We're still here, right? Those of us with adult kids, yes, you're still here now. But one of these days, those of you at home, same thing, one of these days, you're going to die. Then what? Is your child equipped? Is he prepared? Are they prepared when it comes to the practical aspect of the world and the spiritual aspect of the world for them to be on their own standing and being firmly rooted when it comes to their faith? Are they? But again, I'm not saying that to give you doubt. I'm saying that because trust God. We should trust God at that point because there's no other parent who can do what God does, especially this part about not dying. Because God is what? Alpha and Omega. Beginning to the end, He's always going to be here. So even though some of our kids may be out there right now and they're not, you know, they're not going to church, they you know, you have to drag them to church, especially if they're older, you know what? Just keep praying for them. At this point, again, there's not much we can do but that. But we have to trust that God has a plan for their lives. Whatever that plan is, we have to trust that it is good because God is. Amen? Again, listen, parents, do what you can while you can when it comes to parenting your children. After that, continue to be there for them, knowing that God will continue parenting them until they die. Right? Can we let them go at like that? Can we let them go in the hands of God, trusting that God will do what's best for them? Do we have that confidence in God's word that we taught our kids from birth to however long your kids stayed with you? That will stick with them as long